TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Salmon and Sovereignty. Colleen Sisk, chief of the Winnemem Wintu. It has been argued that no state or even country of comparable size has changed its water distribution as dramatically as the state of California. There's some truth to the worn-out joke that the water from Northern California is pumped hundreds of miles to fill the swimming pools of Southern California, where huge cities such as Los Angeles were built in the desert. In the process of building reservoirs, pipelines, pumping stations, and canals, whole landscapes were destroyed or flooded, Native American settlements and cultures obliterated, and species such as the Chinook salmon taken to the brink of extinction. But the swimming pool reference is also misleading. Taxpayer-subsidized water fed and continues to feed giant agribusinesses that in turn pollute the earth and air. And today, in 2014, industrial agriculture use looks almost benign as a project is underway in the middle of an epic drought to raise the dam of the Lake Shasta Reservoir, build twin tunnels at the edge of the Sacramento-San Francisco Delta to divert even more water to the south. And this time, the additional water is intended for use by the oil industry in an expansion of hydraulic fracking. And the governor of California in 2014, Jerry Brown, has given up all environmentalist pretense and is trying to convince the Obama administration that the feds should pay part of the bill. The film Chinatown and the book Cadillac Desert captured the imagination of millions, in good part because they described, with much documentary evidence, the murderous gangster nature of the water wars that built the system that is to be expanded now. Today, a new chapter can be written, and some may say it could be the last one. And the players in this end game have different names from movie and book. They are the new owners of water, such as T. Boone Pickens, Warren Buffett, the Resnicks of Paramount Farms, Kern Water Bank, Metropolitan Water, and Westlands Water District. They all realize that we can live without oil, but nobody can live without water. And the most profit can be made by taking possession of the precious source of life. Among those in opposition to the expansion of the water diversion is one group that personify the David and Goliath discrepancy in every respect. Much of their ancestral land had already been flooded when Lake Shasta Reservoir was filled in 1945. And the Bureau of Indian Affairs took away their recognition and rights as the Winnemem Wintu tribe. And they're making this effort not simply for their own sake, but because they're defending the rights and life of an ancient animal, the Chinook salmon, with whom they have had a several thousand year symbiotic relationship. They saw the salmon die at the base of the 602-foot-high Shasta Lake Dam in a desperate attempt to return to their ancestral spawning grounds. And now the Winnemem Wintu want to make conditions right for the salmon's return. A few minutes into her talk, Colleen Sisk mentions the toxic sludge from submerged mines that is accumulating at the bottom of the Lake Shasta Reservoir. The ongoing releases of acids and heavy metals are leading to periodic fish kills. The toxins are contaminating the water supply downstream of the reservoir into Southern California, but have been declared harmless to humans. And these mines were not on the scale of one man and a mule. When Lake Shasta was filled, mine shafts and debris fields were flooded, along with the mining towns off Kennet and Delamar near the Bully Hill mine. Portions of the tailings and a debris dam at Bully Hill are inundated when the reservoir is full. Several more mines will be flooded if the Shasta Dam is raised. I met and recorded Colleen Sisk, the chief of the Winnemem-Wintu, on April 19, 2014, at a Ukiah, California meeting on salmon and sovereignty. Here's Colleen Sisk.
Most of us know that there's a finite of water, right? There's like less than 2% of drinkable water in the world. There never gets too much more and there never gets too much less. It just turns over all the time. It comes in, evaporates, it goes into the clouds, it comes down as rain, it comes down as snow, it comes up in the groundwaters. But it's not anymore. It's not like, hey, we found a new lake, a brand new lake, and it's just bubbling over with water. You know, or this year, you know, all the wells are overflowing. It doesn't happen that way, right? And so we have to look at, can we afford the kind of decisions that are being made for us, like in this brown water plan? Can the state afford two more fracking mines? Do we understand how much of our water is being polluted every day or every year? Where is that number? Where do we find that out? How much are we polluting of the water that is available for drinking? We don't know that, right? But we should know it, and I think somebody does know it, because, you know, we're fighting against Crystal Geyser up on Mount Shasta right now. They want to delve into a lava tube with unlimited taking of this pristine water. All of the water in that lava tube is drinkable. And what they're going to do is they're going to extract 160,000 gallons a day, and they're going to bottle part of it, and the rest of it is going to go into a toxic waste water, right? And so can we afford to take pristine water like that and create toxic waste out of half of it? You know, that's what water bottling does, and that's what fracking does. But as the public of California, we need more information. Lake Shasta has 60 foot of toxic sludge in the bottom from all the mining. And every man-made lake has toxic sludge in it because we mined everything in California. Hydro mine, mercury mine, you know, we did copper mines, we did nickel mines, we did iron mines, we did everything you can think of. And at the bottom of these lakes, they did nothing before they covered them up, right? They just built a dam and covered up the mines. And so in the bottom of Lake Shasta is 60 foot of toxic sludge. Because we were saying, well, we know that there's sediments at the bottom. Dredge out that sediment and you'll have more volume of water to hold if you take the sediments out. And they said, oh no, we can't do that because, one, we don't know how to do that. And I'm thinking, oh yeah, you do. You can siphon that out. You know, I know how. I'll teach you how to do that. And then they said, well, even if we did, we wouldn't know how to neutralize the poison. And so your answer is to build it higher, and you're thinking that future generations are going to be smarter and brighter, and they will know how to neutralize the poisons in all of these lakes. And five of the lakes in the north, already the fish are already mercury poisoned, including Shasta Lake. For 5 years now, they've known that. We've been asking them, when are you going to put up signs for the people? You know, it's a world-renowned lake. People come there for the recreation. It's like, I don't see any signs telling the people that these fish are contaminated. And in how many languages will you put that in? And then what will you do for the eagles and the, you know, the other wildlife that eat these fish? And they do nothing, right? And even though we're pointing these things out, it's like, I think that it takes the entire state to start showing up at these meetings and voicing your opinions at all of these water board meetings that are happening throughout the communities. Because every meeting that I've gone to so far, I'm probably maybe one of three women, and I'm probably the only ethnic woman there. And the majority of the people in the room are old, white, bald-headed guys over 60 that are in business of farming, that need the water and hate the fish. And we're absent. Young people are almost totally absent at every meeting. And this is what we have to change. They held a tribal meeting in Sacramento on the Bay Delta Conservation Plan. The day after the Bay Delta Conservation Plan was released, the EIR was released, and the 120 days had started the day before. And so they bring in the tribes, and most of the people there was from the State Department, and a few tribes showed up, and none of them knew that the BDC had already been released, and now they're on a time-ticking process, and that EIR is 35,000 pages long. So, hey, what are you going to do in the next 20 days? But also, the tunnels are going to go through the Delta. They will dig up. These tunnels are like four-lane highways, and there's two of them. It's big enough to divert the entire Sacramento River. Of course, they assure me that they won't, and I say, why? Can't you? If it's big enough to divert the entire river, why would you build them big enough if you're not going to divert the entire Sacramento River? Because isn't that pretty expensive to build them that big and you don't need it that big? You could build littler ones and make littler holes in the ground. But they say, oh no, we can't divert the entire Sacramento. It's like, well, why? Because we don't have a permit. That's scary, huh? Isn't that? We don't have a permit. It's like, how many days did it take you to get a permit? Will the tunnels be done by the time you get that permit? And then the Delta and all the salmon in California are at risk. All the salmon. Which means the entire coast is going to be at risk. Because the thousands of salmon that run up these rivers are going to be absent from the ocean. And the ocean is going to need just as much salmon as it did before. The fishermen are going to catch the salmon, the sea lions, the orcas, everything that eats salmon in the ocean are going to continue to eat salmon, except for they won't have these hundreds of thousands that are in California. We want the salmon back. And the Shasta Dam is said that it is for salmon restoration, is number one. Salmon restoration, flood, and export water. And they don't have any design to get salmon around Shasta Dam. But it's for restoration. You have to open up the hundreds of miles of tributaries and upper stream rivers to create more salmon. You have to get them beyond the rim dams, which is the biological opinion in the state. Even though if they build the dam higher, they're going to flood at least 3 or 4 miles more of salmon spawning area on these upper rivers before they ever get the salmon there. And of course, they're looking at trucking and hauling the salmon because this plan doesn't have any way for the salmon to get there. And it's like they're all scratching their heads and saying, well, how do we get them beyond that dam? You know, it's 602 feet high. It's like, ask us. You know, we have a plan. We're trying to meet with you. We're trying to share this with you. We want to sit at your table. We want to be there. So anyway, the process that we're going through here in California, the tribes really need to get up at the table. And right now there's a whole effort on the part of planning and research, which is governor's brain, right? They're the planning and research brain part of Governor Brown's projects, that they are sending out people, holding these meetings, and really instigating Northern California Indians against Southern California Indians. that Southern California Indians have been put into touch with Westland's water district and have made deals now that they're going to get their water through them, the Delta water, and if not the Delta water, they will get Northern California water, right? And so the Southern Californian tribes, they're saying, we really rely on groundwater, mostly. But because of the drought situations, that all of these wells are at risk. And so they're making these deals with OPR, the Governor's Office of Planning and Research. So there is a brewing kind of problem starting to bubble up between the Northern California people, the Northern California people who are fighting for salmon water, and Southern California, who are mainly gaming and casino and golf course tribes, and they need water because they're in the desert. And so this is being played. It doesn't have to be like that, but it's being played, and we should not take the hook. We should talk to each other. We should set up meetings between the North and the South, and we should come up with agreements as tribal people of the state and not allow them to splinter us the way that they're trying to do right now. And the people in OPR are the advisors who are going out and talking to communities. And you know that they're fake people, right? Because they're experts in everything. They're the co-leader on the California Tribal Water Advisory Committee, right? They set up this advisory committee. We're all on it and, you know, talking about the water. And they're the co-lead. And they never show up. They never tell us about these important meetings when Westland's Water District and everybody else's, and they're going to do a workshop at that event. And they don't tell the Tribal Water Committee about it to show up. And then they are also the experts on disadvantaged community water systems, right? The low-income people. And they're co-lead on that. And then the next time you hear about them, they're doing workshops on climate change. Same person. They're doing climate change. They're experts on climate change. And then the next thing, you know, they're going all around the Bay Area selling people on the BDCP about drinking water. Now they're experts on drinking water, right? And now I just found out that this person is expert on drought. The liaison for drought, tribal liaison for drought too, because the Prop 84 monies that are divvied up through the IRWMP programs, you know, the integrated water management programs that tribes are trying to participate with, well, they're the experts for that now. You know, and their background is merely a psychology degree. What does that mean? Are we getting played? Messing with our minds. They are there to massage us, split us, put us against each other, and create a distraction that we are going to miss the boat. That's what their job is. And that's why we cannot allow them to do that to the Indian people. The tribes have to come together on these water issues. And I'm not sure how to do that. And we need a lot of help getting the people to the same table and working through some of our own issues. We need to come together and tell our history to each other so that we have a starting place, so that we can stand together and we can take care of what we know needs to be in our areas. The kinds of things, in addition to, you know, whatever the economy, because the state is not taking care of tribes' needs. And will not. I mean, we should learn that from Hoopa Reservation, right? They have a special contract with the Bureau of Reclamation for release of water for their salmon, because they are still reliant on the salmon. And this past year, they asked for a release because Trinity River was getting warm, the moss was starting to grow, and the salmon were held up in these deep pools and we're not moving on to spawn. So they demanded the water release as per their contract. Bureau of Reclamation stalled around, said, maybe it'll rain next week. Well, we all wait for it to see if it rains. And so the Hoopa tribe pushed the issue and forced the Bureau of Reclamation to make the release. When they were going to make the release, Westlands Water District files an injunction against the release because they have paper water contracts that they would rather have the Trinity water pumped over the mountain and sent down the Sacramento River to them. And so the salmon had to wait almost 8 weeks for water while Westlands had this lawsuit going on, right? And so anybody's making deals for this water, you can expect that you're not going to get the water if somebody else needs the water, and Westlands Water District is going to pay more for the water. They're going to make more. And so while you will sue them for not upholding their water distribution, and you will get the penalty. You will be paid, but that's not going to give you water. You'll be paid because it's cheaper to pay you than give you the water. They'll send the water to the highest bidder, and they'll make, you know, billions more than the little bit they're going to be paying the tribe for breaching a contract, because we have no water rights. None of the tribes have any water rights, and so we don't have anything to stand on. We don't have the same rights as Westlands Water District, who is a junior water right holder. They are capitalizing on Indian people and us not coming together and not demanding that we sit at the table and work through the water rights issue. And as long as, you know, we got these little tiny contracts going out and Indian people think, oh yeah, I got hold of my water, you know, because I have this contract. It's not the same. It's not the same as a water right. And right now, Westlands Water District and many of the other watermongers are buying up all the water. Westlands have bought on the Feather River, on the American River, they've bought 7 miles of our river, the McLeod River. On the McLeod River, Layton Hills owned Ballybaca Gun Club, or the fishing club, for 100 years. He got behind on his taxes. And so Nature Conservancy was going to buy the land and the right along the river for $30 million. Westlands Water District found out, they stepped in, offered $36 million for it, and now have a gauge finding out how much water passes by this 7 miles of river. And they're working in the state to provide legislation that will say, whatever passes by my property and is stored in this lake, I have a right to, and you should release that water to me because I own it. That's coming about. It hasn't happened yet. You know, T. Boone Pickens bought the Ogallala aquifers. Fields has bought, you know, all these rivers back east. Warren Buffett has bought the Klamath and many other dams. And they're moving into a position of owning all the water, just like they own all the oil. They are not going to be poor because there's no more oil. We are doing extreme mining. And when we're doing extreme mining, it means it's almost over. Tar sands is extreme mining that they would not do before because it's too extreme and too dangerous. Fracking is a method that was deemed too dangerous and too toxic to do. But now they're doing it because they're convincing everybody we need the energy, even though they have technology that changes all that. You know, we have technology now that we don't need hydropower. We have the generators developed that could be put in the aqueduct all the way down that would generate more power than all of the hydro dams that are up there now. And if we line that whole aqueduct with solar panels, we would block the evaporation of water and we would generate more electricity. If we could build communities that are off-grid, and think about building communities off-grid, building reservations off-grid, and making them self-sufficient and independent is possible. I mean, we have the technology to do these things. We have technology that are wind generators that are the size of our swamp coolers that would sit on your house, and they're so feather light that any wind that it picks up would generate and supply electricity for a 2-bedroom house. And it's like, we have the technology. Why won't we use it? We don't use it because, like in the 70s, they developed the hydro engine, right, for cars, and the patent was bought up like that, right? They still have that. And they could have been using it since the 70s, but they didn't because they want this money to go down this pipe. It's like all of the energy is in a pipe to your house, all of the water is in a pipe to your house, and all of the exit water is a pipe. And at the end of each of these pipes is a corporation. And if you go independent, they don't get that money, right? That's what they don't want. They don't want you to be off the grid. You know, there are penalties for installing off the grid without permits. For us, you know, the tribes should be doing that. You know, all of those technologies that are out there should be the target for our reservations and our communities, that we should be lessening our dependency on the corporate world. And right now, you know, we have a long way to go, and we have a lot to work on, but we need to get on it because our water is being gobbled up right now. All right. Thank you, guys.
That was Colleen Sisk, chief of the Winnemem Wintu from the McLeod River at Lake Shasta. She spoke on salmon and sovereignty in April 2014 in Ukiah, California. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Open the newest programs page and scroll down. This program was produced off the grid with solar power. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and free as podcast online. This is an unfunded program that depends entirely on donations by listeners. You can contact TUC Radio online at tucradio.org. The email is tuc@tucradio.org. TUC Radio takes its name from an aeronautical term. Time of useful consciousness is the time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness, the brief moment in which a pilot may save the plane. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.